welcome to the LarryNFishers.com podcast. I'm Larry Lannon. I have been recording podcasts with all the candidates for Hamilton Southeastern School Board. Here is my 10th and final podcast, this with Julie Chambers, candidate for HSE School Board, District Number 4. I spoke with Julie Chambers during the morning of Friday, October 19th. With the law office of Julie Chambers in Lawrence, even though she has her office in Lawrence, she lives in the Hamilton Southeastern School District in the area of Fishers. And Julie Chambers is a candidate for Hamilton Southeastern School Board, District Number 4. So, Julie, welcome. Good to have you with us.
Thank you so much. I'm excited to be here with you.
And I just will start out the way I start all of these out, because school board candidates are not always household names. So as a result, tell people listening something about yourself. Just talk about you for a few minutes.
Okay. Well, I'm an attorney. I have been in the Indianapolis area since about 2008. Moved here when my husband got a job at the Finance Center, the Department of Defense in Lawrence. And I was originally licensed to practice in Michigan, then took the bar exam here when we moved. Started out at the Marion County Prosecutor's Office. I was there until 2012 when I left to start my own practice. So I'm now based here in Lawrence. I've got two kids. Emily is 6. She's in first grade at Fall Creek Elementary. And Morgan is 4, and she's in preschool at the play school in Saxony. Of course, my husband, Sean, works in government. So I'm excited to be running for school board.
So you have one school age and one very soon to enter kindergarten.
She may be in kindergarten next year, depending on how the budget changes with the state budgets and funding.
So she's on the cutoff.
Then. She misses the cutoff by about 6 days. She's on August 7th. So we'll have to see if she's even ready, and if she is, what we'll do there. But
all right. Well, as we start this off, and I'll be drilling down to some specific issues as we discuss this, but this is your chance to tell people what your most important issues are in this campaign.
Sure. So the reason that I started to run was really because I felt like the board needed to be more transparent and communicate better with the community and parents. There were some decisions that were being made where, right or wrong, it appeared that the board was making decisions based on what might be best for them and not necessarily the whole community. So I'd like to see some more transparency. I'm happy that they've are going to start video streaming the meetings. I'd like to see them keep those videos up more than 45 days, so hopefully that changes in the future. I know that was a first reading. Some of the other issues, I'd like to see the district put some more effort on recruiting and retaining minority teachers to diversify our teaching staff so it better reflects our students. I've heard from a lot of parents and students that harassment is still a big issue in the schools. So obviously the board can't micromanage these issues, but I think they can set the tone for the district and what's expected of the superintendent.
Okay, you've already summarized a few issues I'm going to get into. When you were at the forum with the Hamilton Southeastern Education Association a few weeks ago, you said, and I'm paraphrasing here, the school board is not always listening to the concerns of parents and teachers. What specific issues or instances were you thinking of there?
Sure. There were sort of two main issues. Obviously, the school calendar, I think, was a big issue last year. I didn't particularly care what calendar they picked. I wasn't as invested. I had a young child, and we both work, so we have care if they're out of school. But they took the time to survey the parents. Parents took the time to respond. And then when they voted, it appeared that they sort of chose the option that most parents weren't preferring. And there wasn't a good reason given for that. And then obviously coming back a week later and changing their decision, I think, reinforced that they just hadn't paid attention or hadn't listened. And then recently there was a new hire at Riverside where typically teachers would have the opportunity to interview those candidates and give some input, not necessarily have the final say, but at least have some say in what they felt of the candidates, and that was skipped. It's my understanding that the teachers were prepared to do that, and then the hire was just made without hearing their input. And I think that's important to have that communication between the teachers, the parents, the board, and the superintendent, so that everybody knows what's going on and feels like they're invested and have a say in some of those decisions.
You know, the teachers were at the school board and were very clear about their view on that particular hire. It wasn't about the individual, it was about the process.
Correct. I don't think anybody had any problems with who was eventually hired, but there was definitely a step that was skipped in that process.
When you say decisions are made for the benefit of the board and not the whole school system, explain what you mean by that.
Well, I think being that they had, particularly going back to the school calendar, they had taken the time to survey. And I think given that parents are busy and they don't always have time to respond in the survey, that I did it and it wasn't necessarily worded well, but it was long and people that took the time to read through that. And then I think if you look at the results, they were pretty clear one way or the other. And then having seven people then make a decision, not everybody voted for it, but make that decision basically going against what the parents had wanted, it just appeared, whether that's true or not, it appeared that maybe they were making those decisions what was best for them or their family as opposed to the whole district.
Yeah, I do remember that survey of the results, and it was interesting because there was no clear majority. But there were several issues. One was clearly had more votes than the others, but there wasn't a majority.
Correct.
Yeah.
And I think part of that came from the way the survey was written. Mm-hmm. It wasn't very clear, but given the feedback, I think it was clear that the community wasn't thrilled with how that played out.
At that same teachers HSEA forum, you espoused a willingness, and I think I'm going to paraphrasing, you think people in the school system should be encouraged to try new things without fear. Now, did you have anything in particular in mind or any set of things in mind when you said that?
Not necessarily a specific thing, but I've recently done a book study with some teachers in the district through the Early Education Alliance. And we read What School Could Be. And I read the book, and I'm not a teacher, and I never could be a teacher. I don't have the patience for what they do. But the teachers that I did meet with through that book study were so passionate about wanting to try new things in their schools and in their classrooms. And I think depending on the school itself, some teachers felt like they had more freedom to try things compared to other teachers who felt like maybe based on the atmosphere in that particular school, they didn't have the freedom to try those things. And I'd really like the whole district, school by school, to be able to encourage teachers to try things and be able to fail, even if they're trying some new technology or a new experiment, because even if it doesn't work, that's also a lesson for the kids that you can try and it's okay if it doesn't work out. And I just want the teachers to feel like they have that freedom within the curriculum, obviously.
You mentioned transparency, and in that forum that I wasn't able to be there in person, unfortunately, I was out of town, but I did watch the entire 2-hour video, so I saw all of your.
Thank you for that.
Yeah.
You might be one of three.
Well, you know, it's that's why it's online.
Yeah.
Actually, more people. I don't know how many people watched the whole thing, but I did because that's part of what I do, part of my volunteer work. But in the area of transparency, there's a lot under that. But it's specifically, you criticized the board docs. Now, for people who don't know what board docs are, that is the area of the internet site for Hamilton Southeastern Schools. Even the new site is still organized under board docs. It's still pretty much the same as it has been, even with the upgrades in other areas of the website. It's a way the members of the public can access documents, agenda, minutes of meetings, those sorts of things that you want to go back and look at. And they have it goes back several years. So, I mean, there's a lot of material there. You criticized it because you did not think, still do not think it was particularly easy to use. So what would you do differently than what the school board is doing now with board docs or its equivalent?
Sure. So I think board docs can be useful. It's a great way to, as you said, it goes back years, so it's a great way to keep that information. But our district also just spent $100,000 on a new website. And I think it's not too much to ask that even the past 6 months or year of meetings could be incorporated a little easier through that website, as opposed to parents having to negotiate through the website to board docs and then negotiate through board docs. Because if you haven't used board docs, it's one of those sites where you have to click a link and then that opens more links. Then you click a link. It doesn't work on mobile devices very well. If you try to swipe through, it goes back to the next page. It's not easy to use. There's no app for it. And as we know, most people are on their tablets or on their phones. And I really think we need to make it as easy as possible for busy parents to get that information. So using that new website, I think, would be a big benefit.
Well, as a reporter, I use it quite often. And I will admit, it took a while to catch on to it. But once you, I mean, it takes a little work to be able to find things. But you know, eventually you can. But so your point is it needs to be more user-friendly and more friendly for technologies like smartphones and tablets.
Exactly.
Also, at that same forum, you did talk a little bit about security. And security, I think, has been an added additional issue for us ever since what happened in Noblesville last spring. We don't have to, you know, tell you about the details. I think everyone knows. And what you emphasized was we, as a school system, should not just be concerned about the shooter. That's a problem. I mean, not to minimize that. But you see security as a much bigger issue. Explain what you meant by that.
Sure. Well, I think every student has the right to come to school and feel safe and comfortable. They can't learn if they don't feel that way. And obviously, school shooters is a big issue. I've been, you know, following those issues ever since Sandy Hook, when my daughter was 6 months old, and you start realizing, I have kids now, what's going to happen? So I think the school's doing a good job securing the buildings themselves. There's things that you can see and things you can't see. But our kids have to be safe all around, not just worried about that big monster that may be lurking in the shadows. And that includes talking to our junior high and high school students about dating violence and making sure that they understand that they can get help there. And that those types of issues can lead to bigger safety issues in the schools. Talking to our kids about physical safety in the buildings between each other to make sure that if there is an issue, not the big issue, but other issues that they don't feel safe, that they know where to go and they know that it's okay to reach out for help.
Yes, I do recall last spring, there have been many events that have been sponsored by the local school corporation, the board, the administration. When there was a security meeting that was held and the mayor was involved in that, as well as Dr. Borf and school board members, they almost filled the HSC high school auditorium. I've never seen a crowd as big for any school-sponsored event. That's because people had an interest. And I think what happened there is something that I have seen covering school board for almost 7 or 8 years, is that school board and the administration have been focused on security for a long time. And they have spent some money on this and they have worked on it. And I think it was very reassuring for the public to know, hey, you know, we don't always talk about this every day, but here's everything we're doing. And I think a lot of people walked away feeling, okay, I feel a lot better about that now. But you feel there's still things that can be done to enhance security above what's going on now, is what I'm hearing you say.
Yeah, and I think, I mean, it's an ongoing issue. It's something that's constantly changing. And I think between the police and the district and the administration, they're obviously constantly reevaluating our policies and updating those, which is important. But we need to make sure we're not just focusing on lockdowns and bulletproof glass, but we're also focusing on the day-to-day issues that could cause safety and security issues for our students.
I want to switch gears just a bit. It was a long time ago. I thought it was over a year ago. It may have been even longer than 2 years ago. I was covering a school board meeting, and a non-discrimination policy came up for a vote. Well, there were two staff members that got up and spoke at that meeting and said they were very concerned that the proposal the board had before was not strong enough. And there was a discussion about that. And at that time, and things have changed a bit, although it's not totally settled, this whole issue of access to facilities for transgender students was in the courts. It was in the administrative process. You're a lawyer. You understand how
yes.
that works.
Obvious. Yes.
So the lawyers were saying we need to kind of be careful because we want to do the right thing, but we have to make sure we don't expose a school corporation to legal jeopardy. So what happened is that that proposal passed on first reading, and it was sent back to an administrative committee to look at. It's been there ever since. And I've asked a couple of times about it, but the answer I get is, well, it's still at first reading. Now, I understand that at least one school board member has suggested that this be brought back for another look. I guess my question here is two questions, really. First of all, what would you like to see in a non-discrimination policy in general? And specifically, how do you believe the school corporation should deal with this issue with transgender students and their access to facilities?
Sure. So I am of the position that our non-discrimination policy should be as strong as possible. No student, staff member, faculty, anybody that works or comes within our buildings or our district should be afraid of being discriminated against based on sex, creed, religion, gender identity, sexual orientation, anything that would fall under that. I think that needs to be as strong as possible. Obviously, there's minimums that we have to follow because of Title IX and federal laws and regulations. I think our district should take those minimums and go a step beyond that to make sure that we're covering everybody. As far as transgender students in bathrooms, this really isn't a complicated issue for me. I've heard all of the other podcasts. I don't know if anybody's really answered yes or no yet.
A couple people have,
I think. So my position comes down to every student should feel safe and comfortable in our buildings. And a lot of times this issue comes to security. People say, well, I don't feel safe using a bathroom with a transgendered student. And I think a lot of that comes down to understanding. People aren't always familiar with this issue, so it's uncomfortable, which I don't think there's anything wrong with acknowledging that, but we need to, as a district, educate our students and staff in these issues. Having a gender safety policy for these students that are in our schools, working with those students to find out what's going to make them safe and feel secure. But we can't, I don't believe we can, I think it would open us up to legal issues if we were to say transgendered students have to use a different bathroom. I think they should absolutely be able to use the restroom or locker rooms that they identify. And it's also important that we have either single restrooms or different restrooms that any student can use if they feel uncomfortable using the public restroom or locker room. That might be that the transgendered student feels in their situation that they'd be more comfortable using a single restroom, and that's okay. But it may also be that another student, a cisgendered student, feels that they're not feeling comfortable using that bathroom, and they should also have that opportunity. So we need to work with our students, but I don't think a school district should ever tell a student, because you're transgendered, somehow you're different and you have to use the separate bathroom, because that's not healthy for that student. They're obviously dealing with a lot of issues there, and they may or may not have the support at family or at their home, and the district definitely should be supporting them in that way.
Okay, moving on to another issue. I moved here in Fishers in 1991. My daughters came along a few years later and went to elementary school. But what I have found, I think ever since I moved to Fishers, probably, or just a few years after that, there's been massive growth the entire period of time we've lived here. From about 91, a few years, because when I moved to Fishers, there were less than 10,000 people living in the then town of Fishers.
Yes.
The school system had a few thousand students. Now it's nearing 22,000, not quite there yet. Fourth largest school system in the state. So we're in a whole different place than we were when I moved here.
Absolutely.
But what we're seeing, and based on the demographic projections that we have, it looks like that growth is going to level off. Even though there is a new elementary school under construction, that's more to get people out of portables than to deal with growth itself. So my question to you is, how will that cause a board members and you as a potential board member to look at the future and be able to plan for the future when you're not worried about all this massive growth?
So I think, obviously with the way the demographics are showing, we're going to have to focus on looking to the future to make sure that our buildings are where the kids are. And that's going to change. Our district is a big district, obviously, geographically just speaking. So we're going to have shifts within the district in different grade levels and different buildings. If our growth slows, I think some other candidates have mentioned, we have the option to open up our borders to allow students from other districts to come here. We don't do that now because we are so full. But that's always an option to get more students into different areas that we may have that opening or that space. Obviously, with our new building, that's very exciting, and redistricting is a big issue right now.
We're going to get to that later.
Yes.
Go ahead.
So we just need to, I think it's important to keep looking forward and making sure that we're putting our students where we need them and where the space is, but looking as far forward as we can. So obviously we're doing redistricting now, and hopefully we're not redoing that again in 3 years, although who knows what the future will bring.
Well, the high schools are not being addressed in this round, so I've got a feeling that may have to happen in the not too distant future, although we're not sure about that. I've already mentioned this, and you've referred to it too, the additional elementary schools under construction on Southeastern Parkway there at Cynthia Ann Road. It opens in August of 2019. And when something like that happens, you put a new building online, you have to redistrict. There's nothing you can do to prevent that. And that redistricting process is going on now, but it's not limited to K through 4. It's all the way up to 8th grade. And there's been a lot of discussion about the redistricting. If you're online, if you're on social media or see some of these platforms or neighborhoods talk, it's the topic of conversation for everyone. Everybody's got an idea. I'd like to know your views, number one, on the redistricting process that's going on now, as best you could watch it as someone from the outset, and what you may know about the last redistricting that occurred about 4 years ago, and how you feel that was handled, and how things are going at the present time as far as the school board and the administration dealing with the redistricting process.
I think they learned a lot of lessons from the last redistricting process, from going to meetings and talking with parents and teachers and administrators and Dr. Borf. I think they're really making a big effort to listen to the parents. I think they tried to do that last time, and I think some community members felt like they didn't do such a great job about that. So they're doing a lot of the same things with the meetings and the focus groups, and I'm hoping that they really take that into heart. The last time, I know I was not as involved last time. My kids were very young, so not as concerned. But there was, in the neighborhood I actually live in now, was going to be moved from Fall Creek to Brook School. There was another neighborhood that was being moved from Brook School to Fall Creek. And when people in the neighborhood sat down and looked at the numbers, and these are just community members, looked at all of the numbers, realized that the number of kids in my neighborhood and the number of kids in this other neighborhood were essentially the same. So they were swapping these schools with really little change. And they brought that to the board, and the board realized that's what was happening and made that change so that those neighborhoods didn't have to swap and move those kids. So things like that, I'm hoping that this time they're really focusing to look at those details so they don't miss those things. So we're not moving people unnecessarily.
And that was interesting, because that was a case where the administration proposal from the superintendent came in and the board chose to change that.
Right.
Now, I'm talking to board members now, and they say, well, you have to give us a pretty compelling reason to do that this time. And I think the last board did feel it was compelling, and you can judge whether that was right. Obviously, you feel it was the right decision because it impacted you.
You know, it did. I wasn't paying attention really at all at that time. This
but
is all information.
But your neighbors.
Yeah. Absolutely, yeah. It did for our neighbors. And it wasn't a situation, I think, where the neighbors in either neighborhood felt like they needed special treatment. It was just, we're already at the school. Why are we swapping these neighborhoods for no reason, really?
One of the most important jobs, you mentioned Dr. Borf just a moment ago, and one of the most important jobs any school board has under state law and just in general is because school boards really are not supposed to micromanage. Some do, but we have a large one, and it's very difficult to micromanage a school system this large. But what the school board is charged with doing is evaluating the job of the superintendent, whose job it is to run the day-to-day goings of a school corporation. So as a school board member, how would you approach the job of evaluating whatever superintendent you may have at that time?
Sure. I think the most important thing, we have, obviously, the school board associations give you a sort of a checklist, which I think we use now, and that's a good basis. I think the biggest thing is to make sure the board is setting specific goals that they want to see for the district, and making sure that those goals are clearly communicated to the superintendent. And that will give us something to really evaluate year after year when we're looking at whether or not to renew that contract. And they may not hit all of those goals, but if we can see some improvement or see that they have put in measures to work towards those goals, that will help us to see what's happening and where we're moving. And I think getting input from teachers and administrators, either through written input or reviews, not necessarily to make our decision, but to really hear how the superintendent and the central office is affecting the day-to-day operations of our teachers and our kids.
And, of course, that would apply to whomever may be in the superintendent's chair. But the current person with that job, and has for the last few years, is Dr. Alan Borf. Based on your having a child in school for at least a short period of time and what you hear from others, how would you assess the job that Dr. Borf has done so far?
Sure. I haven't had any bad experiences with the superintendent or his office. I have met with him, and I've heard some really great things from some of the teachers in the district and talking to parents. Obviously, I think their office and central office could do a better job of listening. We've already kind of talked about that input from teachers and communicating. But I think he's got our kids at heart, and he has the best interests of the district at heart so far. And I don't have any major complaints right now, but we'll see. You know, obviously, as we go forward, if I'm elected, we'll have to delve into that a little bit more.
Well, you have one child in school, and you've had some experience with dealing with teachers and administrators and so forth. What has your experience been with your child in the HSC schools?
We've had a great experience. We are at Fall Creek Elementary, and both kids will be there unless we get moved, obviously, depending on what happens next year. Our teachers, between kindergarten and first grade, I think Emily's teachers have been very different in their styles, but that's not a bad thing. So it's been interesting to see just the different approaches to how they interact with the kids and how they teach the kids. But Emily is thriving. I've had no problems getting meetings with teachers or administrators if I felt like there was an issue or I had to reach out to somebody. I've been to PTO meetings at my school and at other schools throughout District 4. So I've been getting feedback from other parents and other schools. But so far, we've had a great experience. Even if we've had issues, we've been able to address them, which is good.
You've gone door to door talking to voters. So what are you hearing from them in your discussions with them?
Yeah, I've been canvassing a lot in our district. It's one of the things I actually love about running for office this time. I've canvassed for other candidates. I've never done it for myself, so that's been an experience. A lot of the issues parents are talking about is sexual harassment in the high schools. Mm-hmm. It's still a big issue. I've heard from a lot of parents and teenagers who hear I'm running for school board and they want to tell me, here's what happened to me. I was harassed. I told the school. I showed up to school the next day and the person that was harassing me was still in my classroom. And those types of issues, obviously the board can't micromanage. But again, we can really set the tone and a standard for the district to say, this is not okay. We need to make sure we're handling each of these issues as importantly as we can to make sure that every student is fairly treated, and whether they're the one making the allegation or the one having the allegation made against them, their rights are protected. So that's been a big issue that I was actually surprised to hear from so many people that that was still an issue. So that's definitely something I think the district's going to have to address.
Okay.
Obviously,
finish your
obviously
answer.
Redistricting is a big issue on everybody's minds. I haven't had an answer for them, obviously. I wish I did.
Well, it's a complicated issue.
Yes.
And people may say, I'm not happy with the map that I see, or there are more than one out there. But when you say, what would you like to see? It's very difficult to answer because it's complicated. But you know if it affects you in a way you don't want. You know that, I guess.
Exactly.
Yeah. If it's a way you want, you're happy with it. So, you know, you get that answer right away. Well, you know, my final question, if you've listened to my other podcasts, and as I said, the advantage of being the last podcast recording, I finished 10 now. You know, people said it couldn't be done. And I'll have to give credit to the candidates. All the candidates have been very willing to talk to me, and that's not always been the case in every election cycle. But I want to give you a chance to give that elevator speech. You know, just imagine I'm one of your potential voters. I'm going to vote. I've looked at your opponent. I've looked at you. Give me 2 or 3 minutes about why I should vote for Julie Chambers.
Sure. Well, I decided to run last year when I saw, like I said, some of these decisions where I felt like the board just really wasn't listening. And I saw that and thought, we need some new voices and new perspectives. I've never run for office. I don't have any intention of running for anything else in the future, unless, of course, I'm elected and run for re-election. But having two young daughters in the elementary schools, I'll have that perspective tied into the young kids. A lot of our current members have older kids or kids that are in college. They're not necessarily as tied into what's going on as our kids go from kindergarten all the way through high school. And things are changing so quickly there that it's important to have that perspective. I'm not connected to anybody in the city council or the mayor's office, so any decision I make is just solely going to be based on what's best for our kids and our teachers. And that's really, I mean, I grew up going to public schools. My mom was a public special education teacher for her entire career. So I saw how hard it was to be a teacher and to not have the resources. And I went with her every August to the teacher supply store to buy all of her own supplies for her classroom and helped put up construction paper on the walls. And so I know how much these teachers put in. They're not just working 8 to 3. I mean, these teachers are working long hours, weekends, summers to help our kids. And I just want to make sure our district is giving them everything they need so that our kids have everything that they need so they can succeed and they can be engaged citizens. I think that's really the most important thing, not just that they graduate and go to college, but that they graduate from HSE, and if they want to go to college, that they're prepared. If they want to go to a trade school, that they're prepared for that, or maybe they've already had that training, we can expand those programs in HSE as well. Or if they want to just go work, that they're ready to be engaged citizens, get a job, and support themselves.
Julie Chambers is District 4 candidate, Hamilton Southeastern School Board. As we speak, there's early voting going on. November 6th is the official election day. I understand you've already cast your ballot.
I did. I got to vote for myself yesterday. It was very exciting. I teared up a little bit. I don't know if I'll ever have the opportunity to do that again, but being on the ballot with such great candidates, just on either party, all across the board, was just really, really fun.
And it is a nonpartisan election.
Yes.
There are no parties connected to anyone. But Julie, thank you very much for taking the time to speak with me.
Thank you so much. I appreciate it.
My thanks to Julie Chambers for taking the time to talk with me about her campaign for school board. And my thanks to all the candidates. Every local school board candidate took the time out of their very busy schedules to talk with me for a podcast recording. So now it's up to you to vote in this year's November 6th election. This is the Larry N. Fishers podcast. My name is Larry Lannon. I write the LarryNFishers.com local news blog from Fishers, Indiana, the suburban community northeast of Indianapolis. Thanks for listening. We'll talk again.